They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The coronavirus pandemic has plunged the UK into its first recession in 11 years. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Fresh data today showed the British economy is officially in its steepest recession on record after contracting 20.4% between April and June. Taking the different timings of lockdown into account, it's also one of the worst performers in Europe so far this year. As the UK went into lockdown, shops shuttered, factory and construction activity ground to a halt, and household spending plunged. The BBC's Suping Chan explains the scale of the decline.
Victoria, it's bad. Whether you're making things in a factory, selling stuff on the shop floor, building a house, all the sectors in the economy declined between April and June. The UK's performance was also worse than many other economies like Germany, the US. And that's because we do more things that involve social interaction. For example, we've got the biggest soccer league in the world. We also like to go to concerts and live entertainment venues. None of that was happening between April and June. In the first half of the year, the UK economy contracted by around 22%. That's about double the contraction seen in America and also Germany.
But things have started to look up so far in the third quarter, and there are a lot of government programs aimed at getting people out to eat at restaurants, visit pubs, going shopping. All of those are signs that things will be coming back in the last half of the year.
Yeah, if you just walk outside the BBC building, you know, there's lots of tables outside, lots of diners sitting outside, you know, activities coming back. Retail sales are almost back to levels they were before the lockdown. And 10 million people, according to the government, have taken advantage of a special scheme to give them half price dining out. So things are looking on the up, largely due to government support.
Will there be more pain, though, as some of those programs are rolled back?
So there's a furlough scheme in place that's paying part of people's wages, and it'll be phased out completely by October. So economists are expecting the unemployment rate to almost double by the end of the year because of that. And also, Victoria, there's that dreaded B word again, Brexit. That's going to come to the fore towards the end of the year when our current transitional trading arrangements expires. Negotiations start back up again next week, and we'll see what happens with those.
A mixed bag then for the UK economy in the last half of the year. The BBC's Suping Chan. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Checking financial markets, European stocks are largely shrugging off the UK's latest economic data. London's FTSE 100 is up 0.8%. Benchmarks in Paris, Frankfurt, and Madrid are all higher. Shares of airline Cathay Pacific rallied 11% in Hong Kong today after the company said it didn't expect a meaningful pickup in passenger traffic this fall, but it does see a pickup in cargo demand with Christmas on the horizon. We now know the name of the woman who will round out the Democratic Party's White House ticket in November. Joe Biden has named Kamala Harris as his running mate. She's only the third woman in U.S. history to be nominated as a vice presidential candidate for a major party. Research shows, though, decisions to diversify the ticket impact more than just the politics of getting elected. Shannon O'Connell has worked on a number of campaigns for female candidates and is now a director at the Westminster Foundation for Democracy.
What we're finding in our research is that when women move into formal leadership positions, they do bring a very different leadership style and a different perspective, as well as different priorities. So they tend to be more consultative and inclusive. And we know from effective policymaking that consultation and bringing in evidence tend to deliver better outcomes in the long term anyway. And that approach seems to be very organic to most women. And certainly you saw that in the COVID response, Jacinda Ardern's efforts to even reach out to children and bring them into understanding of the policy response was a very good example of that.
So given these examples, why do you think the U.S. is so far behind in putting a woman in one of the top jobs?
Political culture makes a difference in the extent to which women are able to exercise their leadership in a way that is authentic to them. The norms, the standards, the cultures, the practices all affect whether or not women are perceived as legitimate for being able to exercise leadership the way they actually want to. And in the U.S., and quite possibly in a growing number of countries at the moment, the consultative approach that we talked about aren't being rewarded at the moment. They aren't being perceived as desirable in a lot of places, in Russia, in the Philippines, in Brazil, in Turkey. So there has been an element of this emerging globally. But the U.S. has always been a bit of its own culture, in part because the electoral system is all first past the post. So it doesn't nurture a more collaborative approach or collective decision making or working in unified parties or working in unified coalitions.
So do you think as vice president, Kamala Harris could affect some of these changes in U.S. politics?
Kamala Harris could make a very big difference in the way politics are conducted in the U.S. I think not only in specific policy areas, which I imagine she will take up based on her professional history, but also I think in the type of style that she brings to her work to, again, bring in some of these longer term, broader perspectives, shifting priorities, asking different questions, getting different people in the room, making decision making more inclusive and less exclusive, and making it less about zero-sum games and more about collective gains.
Shannon O'Connell from the Westminster Foundation for Democracy. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Victoria, very much.
Well, you can hear more of my conversation with Shannon on female leadership. You can head to marketplace.org later today or download our podcast wherever you get yours. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.